Well, welcome back everybody, and thanks for coming back so promptly after the coffee break. This is the last debate of the afternoon, and we're carrying on the theme of earlier in the afternoon of a topical debate, this time on should we legalise voluntary euthanasia? Should we legalise voluntary euthanasia? The same format as before. First Brenda and then Hugh are going to speak for 5 minutes each, and then it's over to you. Everyone okay with that? And we're going to finish at 4:30 promptly. All right? Brenda.
I'm going to speak against the legalisation of voluntary euthanasia. I'll take the concept of virtuous agents to apply to the voluntary mentally competent actions of the terminally ill patient. A legalisation of voluntary euthanasia would provide the legal means to kill oneself, but the decision would rest with the patient. Without question, assuming the law reflects our moral values, is can we morally condone a decision to kill oneself in such circumstances? A lot of a virtue ethicist approach against the legalization of voluntary euthanasia, this is my own view based on my interpretation of a secular approach to virtue ethics. I'll look at 4 points. Firstly, with some dilemmas, there is no right answer to be found. There will always be that remainder of pain and regret. Virtue ethics does not offer a procedure which leads to the correct decision, and this fits with moral experience. The nearest formula we get is what would a virtue agent characteristically do in the circumstances. A virtuous patient will act well given the situation, and that means being thoughtfully honest, courageous, charitable, etc. I think that if voluntary euthanasia were legalised, this would put pressure on the patient to agree to suicide, and this might work against his calling upon his own reserves of wisdom and courage, etc. Secondly, one could argue that it takes courage to administer to oneself a lethal drug. I think this is true. However, if a person is ill and suffering, the easy availability of this way out may be tempting in a weak moment. The courage of the sufferer who continues to suffer because life is valuable for its own sake has the greater courage. Thirdly, the virtue of charity concerns the good of others. A virtuous community will care for its members throughout their lives, and especially at the end of life. If voluntary euthanasia were legalized, this might restrict palliative care, especially that provided by hospices, which, at its best, is virtuous action by carers, and also by patients who teach others by example. If pain can be lessened, the terminally ill, being in a peaceful environment, may have the opportunity for the contemplation so valued by Aristotle. Lastly, life is a non-instrumental good, valuable for its own sake. The virtues benefit their possessor, but how can the prolongation of considerable suffering benefit animals? In these circumstances, it is hard to see how the virtuous person enjoys well-being. Is your life valuable only insofar as you think it is? And I would argue that a life well lived, a life characteristically human, inevitably involves suffering. And the way to deal with our suffering is what gives our lives value.
Thank you very much, Brenda.
Well, thanks, Chairman, thanks to Brenda for a simple, well-argued powerful case. I think that most of this session is for the members to have an opportunity to contribute, so I don't intend to be very long, but you would expect, since I argued this morning, that we're involved in a project which has the result, the goal of extending our knowledge and benign control in our environment, that I would see as part of that the opportunity and the responsibility to alleviate suffering, and particularly suffering among human beings. We all fear death, and most of us not so much for what might come after it, but the process itself can be painful and distressing. And if we had help to alleviate that suffering, many of us would be welcoming of it. My case would be that it's part of our respect for our fellow human persons that we should respect their autonomous choices, as long as those choices don't result in undue harm to other people. So, although I know that it's a fraught and difficult problem with lots of practical hurdles in our way, I think that with certain conditions, we should consider moving towards allowing people access to life-ending procedures. And I've set 5 conditions. If a person is suffering from a terminal illness, and that person is unlikely to benefit from the discovery of a cure for that illness during what remains of her life expectancy, and that person is, as a direct result of the illness, either suffering intolerable pain or only has available a life that is unacceptably burdensome because the illness has to be treated in ways that lead to her being unacceptably dependent on others or on technological means of life support, and D, has an enduring, voluntary and competent wish to die, or has, prior to losing the competence to have such a wish, express the wish to die in the event that the foregoing conditions are satisfied. And lastly, is unable without assistance to commit suicide. Then in all these conditions, there should be legal and medical provision to enable the person to be allowed to die or assisted to die. So, with these safeguards, and bearing in mind that our responsibility in a whole range of aspects of life is to address and resolve practical problems, I'm arguing that we should help folk who are so distressed that they would like help to end their lives.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks very much. Yeah.
Brenda said that life is a multi-instrumental good, but she didn't justify this statement. I don't think it's true. Hugh seemed to be, the implication of what he said is that that's false, that life, if it's not good in itself, if it's not good to live, then life is not good. And that seems at the crux of the question, at the crux of the matter, is whether
life without being a good life is good. So I hope that's a question.
Okay, Marianne.
Would you like
Rose
to answer that first?
Do you want
to?
I would.
I think Aristotle, I have to argue a virtue ethics line here, so it's pretty difficult. I think Aristotle does think that life is valuable for its own sake.
But
why? Because it's an end in itself. It's self-evident, you think?
Yeah.
No, not at all.
But a good life involves suffering, inevitably.
No,
extreme suffering.
A human life is like an extreme suffering life. You can't avoid suffering. Anybody who thinks that you can go through life without suffering is
not the issue, is it? I mean, this is a life that has nothing but suffering.
Life
I don't agree with that. It would depend on the patient, a particular patient, wouldn't it? But I don't think you can say across the board that terminally ill patients, their lives are all suffering.
But let's just have one person talking away. Right? Thanks. So we're going to have Marianne, and then Anne, and then Peter, and then Frank.
I think this is actually back up your argument, Brenda. Perhaps I don't know. Your fourth thing, Hugh, if you may want to correct me, they must have an enduring wish to die. Or prior to losing competence and express the wish to die. Research shows quite categorically that if you ask people who don't have a condition whether life would be worth living with a condition, Huntington's disease, multiple sclerosis, or whatever you like, people will say no, life wouldn't be worth living, life would be able to die. And if you ask people with a condition whether life would be worth living, they say yes. Of course it is. It's the only life I have. And if you look at somebody who has Alzheimer's, I'm just going to pick disease out of the hat. yes, when competent, they express the wish to die, but you know about this research. And what's more, there is no current wish to die. What there is an animal desire to live. I mean, that's a very difficult one to do, isn't it? I mean, at what point do you say this is a life not worth living? Because what you can't do is kill somebody because you want their life to end. And that's not euthanasia at all, exactly. Euthanasia is when you end their life because there is reasonable belief that they want
that. Yes. That is a very strong argument. Against it, I think I'd say that we can only see the thing from our own point of view. So we're not justified, it seems to me, in imposing on a view on the patient who's in the particular circumstances. So if I have said consistently over a long period that I'm an enthusiast for euthanasia, I have left signed documents with my doctor and my lawyer to the effect that should I ever fall into the condition where I can't make, can't articulate a decision, what I want in those circumstances is access to euthanasia. Then, if I say that, I would not be expecting other than to take responsibility for the outcomes, and I'd want people to act in accordance with my expressed wishes. Of course, if what you say happens, that in extremis, whether I'm compos mentis or not, I'm articulating the opposite point of view, then that would have to be respected at the time.
Well, and the research, which you haven't mentioned, the research shows quite categorically that people with the condition have desires quite different from those without the condition.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, despite the research, I want responsibility for my own things.
As far as I know, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big cases
where
they live about that.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think that this is the issue. I think the issue is whether, if we're talking about a change in the law, what we're talking about is not that trailer, or I actually, I mean, I don't imagine that I would want to argue about that either. But it's not about whether any individual wants it, but whether some other individuals wants it. And it seems to me that your position, Brenda, is to say, well, because I don't think it's a good idea, therefore I said we can't have it. And I can't say, well, we do.
No, it's not my view, personal view. It's this idea that life is good in itself, and but when you end a life, it's not my personal.
No, but whoever it is, whatever position it is you're speaking for, that is the view of that position. But there are other positions, and if another person wants to take the attitude that he was taking, I don't see what right anybody else has to say. No, you can't do it.
Well, I think there are ways and means of ending a patient's life, which exists now anyway, whereby food and water can be gradually restored, sort of thing. I think that goes on anyway. But we're talking about a radical change in the law.
And you don't have to have it, do you?
So what about the dangers of relatives wanting to pressurising patients?
As the majority of the situation, you have to do your best to hedge the registration around the country. You're not going to do it that carefully, but you can't do it like your law.
Okay,
it seems to me that the anti euthanasia case depends on two totally non-virtue ethics arguments. One is a statement of general principle, life is valuable in itself. And certainly I don't think a life in agony, or life in a vegetative state, or life so drugged, as I've seen people, that they are literally not aware of what's going on, is valuable in itself. And I think it would be very hard to defend that. I'm not talking about some of the cases that Marianne's talking about. The other two arguments are both consequentialist, and they're both, oh, if we did this, then that might happen, or somebody might do that, or they probably would. Those are not virtue ethics arguments.
Well, virtue ethics is about the virtues, courage, honesty, charity.
But you're not telling somebody else to be courageous.
No, it's about... I'm presenting my argument from the point of view of the terminally ill agent. So it's not really the case where, I'm not envisaging the case where the patient is so incapacitated that they can't make a decision. I'm looking at this from the point of view of the patient who is capable of making a decision, capable of reasoning and coming to a decision and acting as an agent. If a person is so ill they can't be an agent, then I accept the point, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about an agent.
You can be in extreme pain and be an agent. You can say, I am in such pain, I want to die, while being an agent.
Yes, but not a vegetative state. A
vegetative
state
is not
an agent, would you? No. So it's a matter of, are you going to be virtuous? That means, are you going to be courageous? And my argument is that it takes a greater courage to keep living than to take... a little drug.
But is it courageous to tell a person, be courageous?
Well, of course, virtue ethics is about you, isn't it? It's about you, the agent. It's not about somebody telling you what to do.
We're talking about the law, not about what you would advise
somebody.
Well,
the law is just giving the availability to the patient for the lethal drug. It's simply... The idea is to make that available, but the decision remains with the agent. It's not nothing
to be courageous or otherwise. You're insisting that they be courageous.
Yes.
No, it's not. It gives them an option.
Right, okay, I'm going to take some more questions now. Frank.
Generally, I agree with all that Hugh has said, but there does seem to be one major practical point that's only been touched upon, which is, has to be of great interest to legislators and raises a real moral dilemma, and that is the possibility of abuse of any legislation, insofar as, despite all the safeguards that you have specified, Hugh, it must still be possible that relatives or whoever interested parties who want to bump off somebody because it suits them for financial reasons or others may have an opportunity through legislation of that sort. Now, would you like to comment on that?
Gosh, well, you correctly identify the biggest practical problem. And when I say that we should address the issue with, in good faith, looking for ways to address practical problems, I don't mean to suggest that I've got an instant solution for it. And I think the wickedness of mankind is profound, and it may be that we'll have to think another 100 years before we begin to go down this road. But I don't know, did anybody else have a solution to the problem of abuse by interested relatives?
Just anything on that particular point then about mischievous relatives? Yeah.
No, I just want to say in Holland, for example, euthanasia is legalized and there doesn't seem to be a lot of the abuse taking place.
Yeah, okay.
In Switzerland, they do have, this is going back to the building about story, you know, in Italy, it's proposes, as many philosophers have done, a panel of wise judges to judge things, and that's the way they do it there. And as far as I'm aware, I don't know for certain, but it seems to be a system that largely works because it's a massive check and balance.
Yeah. Okay.
And actually, the interesting moral and philosophy point is, if one or two cases go wrong in this way, that it invalidates the point that you are enabling a lot of people who think this is the right thing to do from doing what they think is right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to make 4 points, if I may, and I'll be very brief. First of all, I think in this discussion you must differentiate between voluntary euthanasia and legalising it. That's what we're talking about, legalising it, not whether voluntary euthanasia is acceptable. That's one point. The other is, in these discussions, invariably people bring up the question of untreatable suffering. Now, at the risk of sounding arrogant, I've been a doctor for over 40 years. I have never met one single patient whose pain cannot be alleviated. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't shorten life, and some of you may remember we had a weekend here probably about 5 or more years ago, and one of the speakers had been involved in palliative care, and he said exactly the same thing. He's never met anybody who couldn't be made comfortable. My second point. My third point is, if we legalize voluntary, who's going to do the killing? Because I'm certainly not. Are we going to go tell a nurse, oh, go, here's a syringe, go and dispatch the patient in bed 3. Now, a very well-known philosopher who will remain nameless, when I discussed it with him, said there should be a specialty called thanatology. Now, as Cicero said, there's no idea so stupid that some philosopher hasn't held it. I put that in that category. My fourth point I'd like to make, which as far as I'm aware is never brought up in this discussion, and that is that if you legalize voluntary euthanasia, it will irrevocably change the relationship between the medical profession and patients.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Ben, and then Phil, and then you.
I was just going to say, I think that partly answered my point, but the confusion, if the patient wants to die, that's suicide. The courage is me as some medical professional thinking, that person is in pain, as has been pointed out, isn't likely, because they'll be on drugs or whatever to alleviate the pain. And then equally, because of the same drugs, unlikely to make a coherent decision, or may well be, as Marianne said, happy to carry on living as they are, because think of my own mother's case, she's really not got great intellectual grip on the world. If I thought the courageous thing for me to do, such a lot, but would be to murder her, that would be euthanasia, if it is in fact the courageous thing for me to do. And I thought, I'm frightened of anybody being stuck there myself, thinking, oh God, this is dead, and nobody will do anything about it. But I can't see it really would be. From me as either a passerby or a medical person, any of the virtues, but particularly courage, it would take courage to murder somebody. But I suppose the legal position is that this is now possible. It takes just that little bit less courage. But that it's not a matter of letting the patient choose for himself. You've got to assume the patient is either not able to choose, and I really can't. If you change the law, I don't think it changes the practice, as I was saying. There might be odd cases where, right, at least we don't have to prosecute the murderer. Mm-hmm. So I would relax the law, but still allow, in fact, people, if I'm being the Aristotelian virtuous person, I can't see how that would happen. I can't see how I actually came about killing somebody who is not in pain. There was an example of something out of a petrol tanker that crashed, and the driver was trapped in the cab with flames all over the place, and he called some passerby to take the gun out of his cab and shoot him. Now that's euthanasia, and I think that's a perfectly acceptable thing to do, because he's obviously, but you can't get in pain when you don't do anything else. In hospitals, it's not going to happen. So you can legalise euthanasia broadly, but in fact in hospital it's down to this person, this committee, whatever, and they didn't make a decision. But it would allow for odd cases where there's sort of legal or morally acceptable murder.
Okay,
so
Phil?
Right,
I just felt this going to be very confusing as to what we're talking about. So what's the great euthanasia with a suicide murder in company? I tend to think it's a Swiss setting where a person knows what they're doing, they go to Switzerland, and they engage in a process that was also the suicide of the person. Now, if you look at that as one of the ideas, if you look at that, then it seems to me the objection that it's going to degrade doctors and so on, it's just not sensible. It's perfectly feasible to devise some kind of, let's call it a machine for the sake of device or something, such that he's rigged up, attached to the patient, and he's up to the patient to take the act, take the step. And I can't see that demeans doctors in any way, shape, or form.
Well, it could be some pills, couldn't it?
No, it could be some pills, yeah. But they'd have to say.
Yeah. Alan, do you want to come
back? Yes, I mean, this question about rigging up a machine, what is the difference between that and doing it yourself? It's the same thing except one removed. And in fact, what you're proposing is what Jack Kerkorian was doing in America. And, well, whether you agree or not, he's now in jail for doing it.
Well, it could be done like Jack Kerkorian did, but in a supervised, under the law.
Well, I think the point that was made a moment ago is that the cases that are being, that would fall into this category, are so few and far between. And when I say that in over 40 years of medical practice I've never met one, it's obviously I'm in a situation where I may not meet certain types of cases. So the types of cases that would be worthy of consideration for legalized voluntary euthanasia are tiny, and you're going to make a very generalized rule, law. I'm against making it into a
Swiss
law.
Swiss clinic has 20 to 30 per year. From about 20 to 30.
That proves nothing.
Okay. Okay, lots more people, so I'm going to take David first, and then Marianne.
One of the things that comes up in involved discussions is that you start off with some axiom or some idea, virtue, ethics, or whatever, And then when you come to particular cases, you've got, well, we're going to make an exception. And before you know what, you've watered down the whole thing. I'm just going to relate two anecdotes which actually fall into this particular discussion. One was my mother, who died of motor neurone disease. You probably know the disease removes all the ability to move. About a month before she lost ability to move anything, she could actually write but couldn't speak. She actually wrote on a piece of paper, "I want to die." Right? What do you do about that? Well, she must, I mean, before that, she did ask the question, "Am I dying?" That's another interesting one, that somebody asked you that question. But she did say, "I want to die." Okay, that's the first thing. And of course, eventually she did die. Well, she died probably of an overdose of painkillers. I don't want to know what happened to that. But that's, I believe, Alan, that's what doctors will do in circumstances where there's no hope whatsoever. The second one is actually a friend of mine. She's 84, her husband died 10 years ago. She's pretty destitute, she lives in a hovel. She's a spiritualist. Now, for those of you that know my own views in this area, you can imagine that we have some rather interesting discussions. She doesn't want to live. She wants to leave this life, and this is the idea, right? You see, somebody's having a different view here. She doesn't want to live here. She values life in itself, but she wants to come back to some other place in another life. Well, when I went through her patients, I found a membership of the Euthanasia Society. I said to her, "Are you going to commit suicide?" She said, "Well, I can't afford to join this society." I'm not going to do it. So she hasn't reassured me that she is going to do it. Nevertheless, here is somebody that would be very happy to do this work. She's not in any pain. She's just fed up of this world. She lives on her own. And there's another example of someone who, you know, might benefit from some legislation or whatever. I don't know. Just two little personal examples.
If she sees her life as continuing in a different form, then that gives her a different view on the whole thing, isn't it? But if you see your life as coming to an end, then that's it.
She's perfectly against it, that's the strange thing. She just doesn't, she's learned that she has no value in life.
Why can't she commit suicide?
Well, she could, I suppose.
Yeah. And why okay, hang on, yeah. Let's. Yeah. I'm going to move on.
At one point, we have, obviously, everyone's in elsewhere, hundreds of times, but when Brenda says talks about the virtues, especially of courage. And charity, you mentioned. Now, we've talked about the courage one, and who might not be having courage, and also with the relatives, who might not have devious aids. But thinking about charity, there would be, I think, a lot of elderly people who would feel that they were exercising the virtue of charity, sort of die sooner rather than later. A, this nursing home might be costing them all their children's inheritance, they might feel, or I realise how much time and worry I'm putting on my daughter or my son, and it really isn't fair, I'd rather they got on with their lives. And although I see all the points why it seems reasonable to allow people who really want to die sooner rather than later, I still think that is really a big moral dilemma to force onto many conscientious people.
Thank you very much.
Mine is that something that perhaps we ought to bring into the discussion is the fact that voluntary and involuntary euthanasia does take place. I don't know, and it's illegal, and I don't know what the numbers are, but it's probably thousands of people a year in this country alone. I mean, for example, the famous philosopher Stefan Kerner killed himself simultaneously with his wife Edith a few years ago, and he was an ethical philosopher and she was a medical administrator. And so my point is this, that from a utilitarian perspective, surely the objective is to minimise the number of ill-considered and bad euthanasias where it is being committed for the wrong reasons. And the only reason that the only way we can really do this is to bring it into the open, legalise it, and make sure that the numbers of such cases of euthanasia are decreased and in that way you can control it. So I
Yeah, I mean, a utilitarian might think the numbers should increase, the numbers of people
are
too low at the moment because people are going through unnecessary suffering.
Actually, it's a very good time to start that question. It seems to me that there's a type token distinction here which is hugely important. We're thinking about a type of action, i.e. ending the life of someone. And it seems to me we have two options. We recognise that euthanasia is sometimes morally acceptable and sometimes morally unacceptable. But what we're actually questioning is whether it should be legally acceptable or not. And it seems to me the two options we have is either we make it legal and accept that it's good, there's going to be abuse, because there will be. I mean, this business about going to bed free and see off the person and, you know, I mean, that's horrendous, isn't it? But that's what's going to happen. It's legal.
Mm.
Or we leave it illegal and accept that we're being hypocritical in some way because we recognise that there are going to be people that help on their way without anyone saying anything. And I think, speaking entirely personally, if I was faced with the option of the illegal and the legal, I think the situation we've got where it's illegal and therefore we're being hypocritical because we know it happens and that sometimes it is morally acceptable, I think it should still be illegal because we can always do it and then admit to it, as Ben said. You say, you know, I did it and that, take me to prison or whatever. I think that's better than making it legal and therefore allowing the possibility of abuse.
Yeah, okay.
Much has been said and always is said about the possibility of abuse. Little has been said about the distress that my decision to go into euthanasia may cause to the people who love me, if there are still any there. I'm certainly not displaying courage. I'm also displaying considerable selfishness sometimes. If there's a serious risk of my children being distressed. I mean, be realist, they also know I'm going to die pretty soon. But they don't want me to die now. Yes. They will cause me distress. And they're so demanding, if not actually selfish.
Mm.
And I'm not being virtuous.
Mm. Mm. Well, that's another factor to take into the calculation. That's how I would argue as a utilitarian. You've got to factor that in. The distress and how close.
I don't know about that. No, I would hope that in the circumstances that would give rise to my decision to end my life enough to avoid extreme pain, for example, that my children would appreciate that I put thought into it, that my life was close to its end anyway, that the reason for my action was to avoid enormous distress to everybody. And if they didn't realise that, then I've failed in my process of educating them properly, it seems to me. So I wouldn't give too much weight to the effect on the younger generation.
Okay. Just time for about two more questions then. We'll go to Nigel, did you want to?
We currently do something very similar with powers of attorney. And we've recently tightened up the legislation quite a lot. It's quite difficult to get powers of attorney. So quite a lot of the questions that were abuse could be controlled in such a system. So you nominate somebody who's going to be the person who pulls the trigger or presses the needle. Could be a relative or a close friend. And they would have agreed to do this in advance. So there's a lot of protection built in with the attempt to make sure that it's much more open and honest.
Yeah. Michael?
Yeah, I don't quite understand some of the logic about the euthanasia might be abused, because it seems to me that the fact that there is that risk is not excuse enough to cause other people to suffer unnecessary pain.
So it seems to me, for example, with Hugh, who has chosen euthanasia, as he said here, that when Hugh dies, whether it's early or later, his children are going to be distressed about it. That's natural. Because it happens in a way that causes less pain rather than more pain, I would have thought his children would have been happy. That surely what we should be looking for is a system that minimises distress and minimises pain. My father-in-law died in Sobel House Hospice. He had the very best possible palliative care that there was available, and there's no question that he wished he died earlier than he actually did.
Okay. I'm going to give the last word to Marianne, and then if you'd like to just come back finally and say anything.
I think to get back to the virtuous hyper agent, I would just like to make that point. I mean, my mum has a living will made up so that I'm the one that makes the decision. I don't see that that makes anything better at all. That just makes
you
my
work.
Position
work.
Work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, when do I do it? Do I do it? Is it wrong to do it now, later, ever?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I feel that the decision of the terminally ill, the capable of making decisions, agents, are there. They must ask themselves, what would a virtuous agent do in these circumstances? And I think if there is courage in taking a lethal drug, if there's also courage in remaining alive, Aristotle would ask which was the greater courage, and I think the greater courage is in remaining alive. And so that would be my argument, I'm afraid. That's it for
okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, that's fair enough. I think my bottom line is the autonomy of persons. There are some countries where suicide is illegal. This country, I think, but there are others where it's not illegal. And I'm not seeing a difference between. Making suicide, allowing suicide on the one hand, and helping somebody who would like some assistance at the end of their life when they're not best placed to make these arrangements by themselves, rendering assistance so that they can do it. It's in line with the principle of respect for the autonomous choices of other individuals.
Okay, I'm going to bring the discussion to a close there, and thank you all very much, and particularly to you.
I would like to congratulate Tom and his team putting together a great day. They had the courage of new formulation of Members' Day, and went ahead with it and organised it very well. Thank you very much, Tom, and to all the speakers.